Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. I share ideas and strategies and blueprints. I tell stories. I share my big epic mistakes I've made along the way. I sometimes interview experts. And all because I ultimately believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. One of the ideas you'll hear me talk about a lot on this show is project-based learning. And today I'm going to be talking about this idea of how we come up with good project-based learning ideas. So if you're planning a PBL unit, you know, where do you come up with those ideas? And before we get started, I want to share a few different opportunities. The first is the PBL introductory course. This is a self-paced 5-lesson course for those who want to get started with project-based learning. They've never practiced it before. They're not sure what it's like. The other one is the PBL master course. This is a longer, 25-lesson deep dive where I walk you step-by-step through creating a PBL unit. And then also, if you're interested in having me do a project-based learning workshop or bringing me in for a keynote connected to this idea of empowering students with voice and choice, you can find all of those things at spencerauthor.com, which is my website. So without further ado, let's take a deep dive into this idea of how we come up with good PBL ideas. I love to come up with project ideas. The brainstorming process feels a bit like going to a candy store, where I get to peruse past experiences, seek out new interests, find the materials, and just feel inspired by whatever pops up. Or better yet, it's a bit like being a chef with a giant pantry full of ingredients. I can pick various spices here and a random ingredient there, and then I get to fuse them together to create a new dish. Or perhaps it's more like being an explorer. Yes, I have the constraints of a curriculum map, but this map should inspire possibilities rather than limit my route. And I get to explore and find new possibilities every single time. In fact, the very constraints involved in having standards often pushes me to think more creatively because I've got to problem solve and think strategically. Now, while I love coming up with project-based learning ideas, there is a dark side to this. They tend to be my ideas, which means I'm likely to choose ideas and topics that I'm interested in, or ideas that I think the students will like. Whether it's at the higher education level where I currently teach or at the middle school level, I have to force myself to listen to others. This includes the larger community, the educators I work with, the students I teach. I need to listen and pay attention to what they want to do. On the other hand, some people struggle to come up with new ideas. Over the past decade, I've had the honor of leading project-based learning workshops with teachers all over the world. I've done coaching with teachers in elite private schools and low-income Title I schools, like the one where I worked. I've been in rural settings and worked with teachers in the heart of a city. But for all the differences, I'm struck by how similar our concerns and challenges tend to be. And one of the most common questions I've heard is, how do I come up with good project ideas? I'm going to talk about how we do this. But first, I want to talk about what it means to do project-based learning. It is amazing when projects work. This learning tends to stick more. And this is because you're able to reduce the cognitive load by breaking down the information. You sort of put them into schemas. And the process of working with the information allows you to move more of the knowledge from short-term to long-term memory. So students, as they engage and they wrestle with ideas, they remember it more. Often it's also tied into experiential learning, so they're not just hearing about the information or reading about it, but they're also doing something with that. And that itself, that experience becomes memorable. Now, when this knowledge sticks, we often see an increase in student achievement. And the Lucas Foundation has demonstrated how this can lead to improvements in things like AP scores, student achievement scores across the board. It is a very common phenomenon. For a long time, they knew that that PBL, rigorous PBL, right, where it's aligned to the standards, where it pushes critical thinking, leads to at least moderate improvements in student achievement. Now they're realizing it can be significant improvements as well. But I would argue that while that's important, more importantly, students are empowered with more agency and self-direction. They gain critical soft skills as they engage in deeper learning. In other words, by empowering them in the present, we prepare them for the future. But that being said, not every project is guaranteed to succeed. We've all been there before. You plan out a project that you think students will love, but 2 days into it, you realize that it's a dud. It simply isn't working. The bad news is that you'll never be able to avoid this scenario entirely. Teaching is messy and unpredictable, and every project is always going to be an experiment. That's the bad news. But the good news is that we can think intentionally about our projects at the early stages when we first come up with a PBL concept. Great student projects tend to be authentic. They also tend to be aligned to the standards. I've actually done a blog post about this and a podcast. If you want a deeper dive into it, you can look in the show notes. You can find it. They tend to be feasible, right? Realistic. They need to be projects that students can actually do. They need to be challenging. The best student projects inspire critical thinking and stretch students to develop vital soft skills at the same time. So they need to have a challenge that they're actually accomplishing. And really, across the board, what they have to be is going back to that very beginning part. They have to be real. They have to be authentic. Jennifer Gonzalez refers to sort of fake projects as Gresham Earn projects. Or Chris Lehman describes how when students are just following a recipe, it's recipe-based learning, not project-based learning. There needs to be authenticity. Authenticity to an authentic audience, authenticity to the task at hand, the scenario. It needs to be real to them. So where do we actually find good, authentic PBL ideas? Well, I'd argue that there are three different starting points that we can go to in terms of finding and being inspired for PBL. Number one, connect with a PBL teacher community. George Koros once shared the idea that the smartest person in the room is the room. And he went on to elaborate that this isn't the room itself. This is the network of knowledge, the compounding way that one person sharing with another leads to another person sharing with another, and it sort of grows exponentially. This is the notion that the collective network of knowledge is greater than what each person individually can come up with. It's an idea that James Sarowiecki explored in The Wisdom of Crowds. And it's something that we see often, that the collective whole can provide a significant amount of inspiration and wisdom. This is why some of the greatest project ideas occur as you interact with a project-based learning community. You might join a private PBL group, like a Facebook group within a PBL organization. You could do meetups or conferences. This is why I included a community and discussion component to the PBL Master Course. I really believe in the power of connecting with other people. It doesn't have to be an online community. You might have a local meetup with other teachers who are in different stages of the PBL journey. You might attend a PBL learning conference. There's a lot of great ones out there. I love some of what Defined Learning is doing right now. I love what PBL Works does. There's a lot of great options out there. And sometimes we find ourselves hitting a mental block, and we simply need exposure to more diverse ideas from people outside our immediate context or our subject area or our school district. But at some point, though, it also helps to have a community of fellow educators who are also doing PBL together. Project-based learning is a different approach to teaching, and it can feel kind of lonely to take a different route. You run into uncertainty and moments of frustration when nothing seems to work. And in these moments, it helps to connect with other teachers who are also engaging in that process. It's a chance to take ownership of your professional development. You might observe one another's classes. You might start a mastermind group where you share your goals, your experiences, and then problem solve together. You might do a shared book study or go through a self-paced online course together. Through this process, you become inspired to try new ideas. You might co-plan entire units together with other teachers. But you might borrow concepts that you just see when you observe. And you're not necessarily stealing their ideas. You're just looking at that and saying, that's a great starting point. I'm going to do something different, but I'm going to build on what that teacher is doing. We tend to think of inspiration as being sort of individual and solitary and a deeply personal experience, and it is. But it's also inspired by experiences in our community. Inspiration is deeply social. This community doesn't have to be limited to fellow educators. It might include industry experts, which leads to point number two, talk to industry experts. Years ago, I made a quip at a barbecue, and I said, nobody actually uses a matrix in real life. I had been talking to a neighbor about how confusing upper-level math was for me when I was in high school, but right then, a woman walked up to me and said, I don't mean to intrude, but matrices are a huge part of what I do every day. She then described how she used matrices in her field of engineering, but then she described how matrices were vital for everything from satellites to communications to social science data analysis to computer graphics and animation. Similarly, I didn't understand the value of trigonometry until, as a history major, I learned about how ancient mathematicians used trigonometry to determine the distance of the Earth to both the moon and the sun, and it is fascinating. Suddenly, math shifted from a series of formulas, recipes, and abstract ideas toward a new way of thinking. Math can be a powerful way to solve real problems. In both of these cases, I had failed to grasp the authentic context of mathematics. Now, anytime I find someone or I find myself thinking, you know, we don't use this content in the real world, or why are we bothered teaching this to kids, right? It's almost always a chance for me to ask, how do people actually use this in the real world? It's an opportunity to see how context connects to content. One of my favorite ways to discover project ideas is by interviewing industry experts who can tell me how they use the content in their context. As teachers, we can start with the content we teach and ask people, what does this look like in your work? We might interview an engineer before doing a STEM or STEAM project, or a community organizer before a social studies project or a service learning project. We might be content and pedagogy experts ourselves, but often people in the field are experts in the context and application of that knowledge. Another option is to connect students to industry experts so that they themselves make that bridge between content and context, which leads to the third and final idea. Ask the students. Some of my favorite project ideas have come from students. When we ask students for ideas, we build ownership into the processes and we tap into student agency. Instead of trying to figure out what they'll find authentic, we start with the question, what do you find authentic? And we listen intently at their answers. This doesn't mean we simply let students decide every project. As educators, we are still the experts in our content and in our subject, and yes, in pedagogy and best practices. But it does mean that we listen intently and humbly. We can honor student agency by bringing students into this planning and decision-making process. One way to do this is with optional student leadership teams. Think about it as a planning session with your students rather than just your colleagues. The process is entirely democratic. Any student is welcome in the leadership team, and every student has an equal voice. In some cases, you might even invite a single student from each meeting to attend your department or team planning sessions as well. These meetings can take place before or after school or during a prep period, but if you have time for it, you can invite the entire class to participate in this student leadership meeting, you know, once or twice a month. I first began student leadership meetings as a middle school teacher. I was a team leader and a department chair, and we had just launched PBL in our team, but also in the social studies department. And one of my team members asked this question: if we really want student voice and choice, why are we coming up with project ideas and essential questions instead of letting them help? From here, we launched the student leadership team. At first, we had students apply to be on the team, and that was a fun process. I think that was a really authentic process. But what we found is that the most eager students were the high achievers, and they were the ones that showed up. And our less engaged students weren't interested in that sort of rigorous application process. We also didn't have a very fair representation of exceptional learners or English language learners as well. So we shifted toward a more democratic meeting, and here's how it worked. Any student could join the student leadership team, and we would have meetings once a week. The way we did it is we rotated around. We did it at lunchtime and again once a week, and we rotated. One of us would give up our lunch one day a week, and then we would sort of get comp time to be able to take a lunch later during our prep period. So it was essentially like having part of your prep used for a student leadership team, but you know, we would have to kind of use lunch to do it. It wasn't perfect, but it was the system that we used. And here's a general sense of how it worked. You would start with a check-in. Each student says one high, one low, one random fact about themselves, something like that, super fast. Current feedback, and this could be feedback on current practices, current projects, what's working, what's not working. There would be open feedback on what could be improved. And then we would move, you know, after a short period of feedback into decision-making. And sometimes this was generating ideas, where you set the stage, you explain the upcoming units, you research ideas, you share ideas. Sometimes though, after generating those ideas, we would shift into narrowing down the ideas, you know, giving feedback ideas, summarizing, clarifying, doing some decision making, you know, making sure that the ideas really connect to the standards that you're teaching. And then we would actually have students engage in the planning process, where they would ask essential questions, driving questions, kind of plan out the phases of the projects together. And this wouldn't all happen in a single unit or a single meeting. You know, Thursday was when we did our meetings. One Thursday, they would generate the ideas. The next one, they might narrow down the ideas. The next one, they would plan together. And so they might spend 2 or 3 weeks on planning a specific project. But wherever they were, they would then end with closure, where we would come up with next steps and students would engage in a quick reflection. And this was actually only a half an hour long process. So it's amazing how much you can get done in a half an hour when it's structured. And so again, thinking back to this, the idea is that number one, we reach out to our community, including our teams that we work with. Number two, the idea of talking to industry experts. And number three, asking the students and getting their feedback. And when this happens, we will ultimately be inspired to have better, deeper, richer, more authentic project-based learning. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Also, quick request, if you go to spencervideos.com, would you consider checking out my YouTube channel? If you are not currently subscribed to it, would you subscribe to my YouTube channel? That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.